Welcome to this new episode of the ISCN podcast, the podcast on smart urban development by the International Smart Cities Network. My name is Leah Hemmetsberger, and in this new episode, we'll fly over to Canada, and more specifically to Montreal. We are meeting Professor Dr. Ursula Eicher. She heads the Canada Excellence Research Chair on Smart, Sustainable, and Resilient Communities and Cities. With her, we are exploring the role of digital twins for net zero city planning and how we can use urban digital twins to engage with citizens better. So let's go. Ursula, thank you so much for being on the ISCN podcast. I'm very excited to have you here today. I already have an idea of who you are, but maybe you can briefly tell us about yourself. Who are you and what are you currently doing?
Yeah, hello. Thanks for inviting me to the podcast. My name is Ursula Eicher. I work here in Montreal, Canada, on smart, sustainable, and resilient cities and communities. I've got a Canada Excellence Research Chair, and that's why I moved from Germany, where I spent most of my professional life about 5 years ago.
That's pretty interesting also for the Canada Excellence Research Chair. I'm wondering sort of how did you get into this position also, sort of from a German perspective, how did you get into the Canadian sphere of the Canada Excellence Center, Research Center?
Well, I was working on decarbonization of cities in Germany already. I was in Stuttgart at the University of Applied Sciences. And by my work, I got contacted actually by an international headhunter who was looking for this, for somebody to fill this chair position. And because the offer was basically one you couldn't refuse, a 7-year funding to set up a big team, I accepted the position. And that's how I came to Canada.
Yeah, super interesting. And I will get back to this point and sort of what you're doing there at the moment also. But now you mentioned you got to Canada, you got to Montreal, and you're there for now 5 years. What is your favorite place at the moment in Montreal, in the real life, not in the digital one? We'll get to this later.
Well, my favorite place is Mont-Royal. It's one of the name givers. It's actually a real mountain in the middle of the city, and it's a forest. It's a real forest where you can go snowshoeing, cross-country skiing in winter or walking in summer. And it's actually the highest point in the city, and nobody's allowed to build higher than Mont-Royal because everybody should see it, and it's a beautiful place.
Because it's Mont-Royal, it's a royal mountain, basically.
Yeah, and it's nature in the city, so it's...
That sounds fantastic. Yeah. That sounds fantastic. Thanks for sharing that with us. Also, just before we dive into the topic of digital twins, which is our core topic today in our conversation as well, I read up that you are actually a physicist. And I was wondering, because sometimes the path towards smart cities and digital twins, and also when I look at my CV, it's not always straightforward. And I'm just curious, like, how did you come from, you know, being a physicist in a very, like, domain, that domain, and how did you end up being in that domain of smart cities and digital twins?
Well, it was a pretty logical way for me because I was always interested in solar energy. I mean, when I started to study in the 80s, we had already a students group building our own solar collectors. I mean, that's where the ecological movement started in Germany. The Green Party got founded. And so everybody was into it. And of course, physics is much more abstract in general, but we were interested in these applications. And then I got into solid state physics and materials for solar cells. And my PhD was actually on materials for solar cells. And then I worked in a research center on solar modules. And then I got a position at the Stuttgart University of Applied Science on in building physics, and I started to work on building integration of solar, and then of course you think about the buildings and their energy consumption, and sort of slowly it moved up from this very small scale, basically looking at understanding how particles interact in solid states, to more and more large scale applications of buildings, and then clusters of buildings, and then the networks connecting it. It sort of grew pretty organically. So my interests broadened with time.
That's a tough, I find it totally fascinating, that background, and also sort of how you describe it, right? From, you basically came from a very specific part, and then it grew and grew, and more aspects always got encompassed. And what I'm curious to hear from your point of view, and also with the focus of your research, with your background, but also within the Canada Excellence Research, with a focus on smart, sustainable, and resilient communities and cities, what are the current trends, but also challenges, do you see for cities and communities at the moment? Like, what are the top aspects that you are researching at the moment?
My main work is on decarbonization. So that means we look at all aspects on how to reach zero emissions for the built environment. And I mean, with my background in building physics, I still focus a lot on the building stock and decarbonization. But at the same time, there are big emitters in cities, mainly caused by transport. So sustainable mobility is a big topic in every city that really wants to move towards zero emissions. So the buildings, mobility, industry, of course, there's still industry in cities that is more difficult typically to decarbonize, is another sort of big topic in cities research. And then there's this whole aspect of nature-based solutions, biodiversity in cities. I mean, the UN Habitat just set up office here in Montreal to look at the Sustainable Development Goal 11 on cities, and they come from work around nature-based solutions. And of course, that's another emission thing. So it's a complex, cities are complex systems, and we try to look at all these aspects that are related to carbon emissions. I mean, either sources or sinks. And of course, the challenges are that the problem is big and complex and requires enormous investments, because if you want to basically retrofit every individual building, that requires a lot of money. There are also lots of vested interests. I mean, there's a lot of companies that do not necessarily want people to use less resources or just share cars instead of owning their own. So there are powerful interests, of course, that are still going against less resource use and decarbonization. And then there's a lot of silo thinking. I mean, whereas these problems are all connected. I mean, how you build and how many amenities you have in the city will influence the transport system, whether you need a car or not. It depends a lot on how a city is laid out. So I would say that I think people realize the complexity and the linkages, and there is a move towards breaking these silos and bringing together people who know something about finance and know something about citizen participation, and of course the technical topics that are sometimes not so easy to solve.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. What I'm also wondering, because you are German and you have lived in Stuttgart, for example, for quite some time, and now you've been living in Canada, in Montreal, for the past 5 years. And the challenges and also research topics that you just mentioned, they sound quite universal. So also applying to lots of challenges in Europe, if I'm not mistaken. Do you see any core differences between sort of the two continents, Europe, the North America, but also Canada and Germany, maybe? Any specific differences where you say, like, this is something that stuck out to you when you arrived in Montreal?
I would say the problems and challenges and even the solutions are actually pretty similar. I mean, many cities around the world are sort of front runners for these efforts. And they need to do so because most emissions are created in cities. So the pledges that cities make to reduce emissions by in 2030 by 40-50% and then completely decarbonize by 2050, that's all very similar, I mean, across the continents. But of course, the context is different, the financial capabilities are different, the whole tariff system is different. Here, electricity is very, very cheap because mm-hmm. there has been lots of investment in hydropower in the 70s. So electricity is very cheap, is very green, and it covers already nearly 50% of all demand. So of course, in detail, the situation is different. But so while the building sector here is already pretty decarbonized because it's electrically heated and the electricity is nearly 100% clean, that problem is easier to solve. But the whole mobility emissions, the mobility emissions are the same as everywhere else. And electric cars are only taking on slowly. Mm-hmm. And in the end, then there's a limit of available electric capacity because it was never designed to cover everything. So there's still a need to think about renewables. And there's, of course, a strong need to reduce demand in the built environment where often it's just electrically heated directly. Mm-hmm. So the local context determines a bit which solutions are easy to implement and financially viable and where it's more difficult. But in principle, of course, the topics around buildings, mobility and industry are very, very similar.
Yeah, very interesting. When we come now so a little bit to more to like specific projects that you have been working on together with your team, but also in collaboration with the city. When I was researching for our conversation today, I found that you are and have been running multiple different projects. I mean, from more digital twin gamification projects, and one that I found pretty interesting was also around the design of a so-called eco quartier or eco district, if I'm not mistaken, in Lachine, if I pronounced that correctly. I hope I do. Can you tell us a bit more about this project? So, what is an eco quartier and what is the goal of this project?
Well, the name eco quartier, I would say, comes pretty much from France. There's very strong linkages between Quebec and France, and this whole eco district movement is influenced by European districts, and of course it's a rather vague term. I mean, from my perspective of the energy side, of course, it means zero emissions. But if you would ask a citizen, they would probably answer it's access to green space and dealing with recycling and reducing waste. So it's basically all of that. I mean, it's a ecologically friendly district, which in the best of all worlds would encompass all these topics of being zero emission, but at the same time providing a good quality of life to the inhabitants, being socially just, and so on. So this project in Lachine is actually a borough of Montreal, but the boroughs are here pretty independent. I mean, so they have their own mayor and have a lot of decision-making power. So the it's an old industrial brownfield where steel constructions were produced a long time ago, and it's been sitting empty. And the city has been working for many years now on developing this project and in a very participative approach. So there has been a lot of citizen participation, lots of community groups came up with ideas on how to develop that site. Mm-hmm. And now it's basically time to build. So now they need to decide, do we invest into district heating and cooling? That's on the table just now. But also the city doesn't own the ground. It's all the private sector. So what can they do to make sure that the developers who build there really build highly efficient buildings that they connect to the district heating and cooling system, mm-hmm. And then build some amenities that ensure that this is really a complete neighborhood where you can walk to the main amenities.
It's quite interesting because it sounds, well, it reminds me a bit of what happened in Toronto, I think it was, with Sidewalk Labs a couple of years ago, but just a bit the other way around. On the one hand, what you just said is like in Lachine, there was a lot of citizen participation from the beginning, which was not the case in Sidewalk Labs. And the ground in Sidewalk Labs was owned by the city to be bought by private company. And now you have a brownfield that is owned by private company. Did I understand that correctly? Like, is it like completely inverse way around? So when Lachine started, was Sidewalk Labs also a learning, or did that play into like planning the whole new district? Was that something that you took into account?
No, I don't see a direct connection. Of course, mm-hmm. many topics. I mean, the Sidewalk Lab project had also a lot of interesting aspects from a technological mm-hmm. point of view and construction point of view. So there was a lot of good ideas on building this massive timber and on waste management strategies and local renewables and so on. So that was an interesting part. But I think what scared people was this whole all invasive data collection by mm-hmm. a private company, and nobody really knew what to make mm-hmm. out of this. And so in the end, the project doesn't happen in Toronto. And here, the approach was, as you said, completely different. It was more a citizen municipal action of trying to figure out what is wanted. But it's now, of course, now is the sort of critical stage of decision making. And mm-hmm. and that is, of course, much more difficult if the city doesn't own the ground, because then they need to negotiate with the private sector to give them maybe more density, i.e. more profits in return for some ecological measures. So mm-hmm. that's it's easier if the city owns the ground, because then they can set the rules easier. But that's now, so this is more, needs a lot of convincing mm-hmm. and in the end needs to be financially viable for the private sector to participate. So that, I think that this tension exists always. I mean, the citizens always want something solidaric with plenty of public space and mm-hmm. civic centers and sports facilities, but somebody needs to pay for it. So, and the cities typically don't have, even if the city owns it, I mean, cities don't have the money to invest in all of this. So I think the challenge, I think everywhere, is how to align the interests of cities mm-hmm. and their citizens, of course, and the private sector. And that's on the table just now.
Yeah. And so is this also where your work or your role as sort of university research comes in supporting this eco district, or is your role a completely different one?
I mean, what we can do as neutral entity is for sure de-risk the more innovative strategies, because I mean, here in North America, for example, district heating and cooling is very unusual. It's so there's not much experience with the mm-hmm. technology, and of course, whether it works or not, I mean, financially, I mean, technically it will for sure work, but whether it works or not depends a lot on how well you assess the future energy demand. That's where our models can come in mm-hmm. to basically be more sure of what to expect in terms of mm-hmm. demand and supply. So we definitely can help with this technical consultancy. Although, of course, the city had before given a feasibility study to a private sector consultancy. But when you look, study the reports, you always see, well, there's a lot of assumptions in there which might not necessarily be be the final truth. So, and lots of uncertainties, and that creates a risk, and risks always cost money. So I think one thing we can for sure do is basically dig a bit deeper, provide more reliable figures on the possible energy demand and solutions for the supply. It's one thing, and the other thing is more around the governance models, because if a city has never operated a district heating system, I mean, we can look at examples around the world and see, well, there are all forms of ownerships, and then analyze and present and discuss the advantages and disadvantages of going completely private or completely municipal owned or something in between. And I think that's so this whole governance structure is another big topic just now to make sure that if they do take a technical decision, that it's also sort of socially just and does not just privilege a few people who can then afford to live in fancy condominiums.
Yeah. So basically from this cooperation between the city of Montreal and this borough, Lachine, and in this case, Concordia University, what would you say are sort of the key benefits for the city in cooperating with the university? Is it this neutrality that you just mentioned, or is there also other points?
Well, coming back to my point of the silos, I think university can be also a convener of the different parties that typically don't sit together. I mean, so seeing this whole picture of what is at stake, if you have the real estate, but you also have the utilities, I mean, the electric utilities who all struggle with accommodating all this additional electricity demand. So typically their infrastructure is not built for this. So if you can bring them into the boat and say, well, if we invest into a district heating and cooling system, maybe you don't need to upgrade your transformers or your lines. And then that saves you money. Maybe you can bring in some funding for this project. So these people who typically don't really talk to each other to get them all together at the table and try to find solutions, I think that's also something I've been pretty active with here in Montreal. And I think that's interesting for everybody involved. Mm-hmm. It does not necessarily need to be a university, but somehow nobody's doing it. So we're doing it. And I think that's another, I mean, apart from doing all these simulations and number checking or so, we can also act quite well in this role of convener, because we basically have no vested interests.
Yeah. So thanks for that explanation as well. And what I'm curious now, because we also want to talk a bit about the topic of digital twins, and I know that you have also other project where you have worked really directly with sort of this concept and with the tools to form a digital twin. Is this something that came also to use in the simulations that you did, in the modeling that you did for Lachine? Did you also use digital twin sort of capacities or tools to visualize this, or was that not part of this project for now?
I mean, this is only starting. I mean, typically we use, I mean, digital twins for me are basically 3D models of the built environment, including everything in between, the spaces, the streets, and so on. And this is a brownfield, so there's a few buildings, but pretty much it's empty. And so here, first of all, and that has taken many years, the city develops a master plan and has a lot of public consultation around this master plan. And actually, I just got the digital version of that master plan maybe 2 weeks ago. So that process of coming up with a master plan and which is still not the final version of what is going to get built. There's still space now for negotiation with the developers. But there is basically now a first plan of how the site will develop. And that process takes easily 5 years or more till you get to that kind of plan. And so now we have the plan, and now we we can use the plan. We need still a bit more information on what the usage is. Even that is not completely fixed. So we can then put these 3D models into our simulation platform, and then we can model the energy demand of every individual building, and then we can design a district heating and cooling network based on that mm-hmm. demand, and then we can run a combined simulation of what mm-hmm. the how a central solution with the district heating network compares to everybody on his own with a mm-hmm. heat pump in every building, or even just electric heaters. What yeah. you could still do today under current building codes, you could still do that. So, we're going to do that work now to basically work with the city of, does it make a difference to have more mixed use in terms of energy demand? What happens if the building standards are maybe better than what the code requires? Because that will reduce the demand, good for everybody, but not for the people who want to operate a district heating network because they need to sell energy. So if everybody, we discussed that yesterday in a meeting, if everybody would build to passive standard, then it will be more difficult for the district energy solution financially. So it's now time to compare different scenarios and hopefully come up with a good or optimum solution.
Mm-hmm. That's quite interesting, because this is something that I don't really hear in sort of European discussions around this topic, this sort of thinking also of partners, energy providers, for example. Well, they need to make money also, right? At some point. But it's quite interesting that you bring this to the table, because as I just mentioned, it's just not something that, at least openly in the discussion, I haven't heard a lot. But basically these partners, these stakeholders, you all bring together and also in this project, and then sort of options and ways forward are being sought together then. What I would also sort of love to understand a bit more is in this specific project also, you're now developing or working on sort of the baselines, the foundations, you just get started, and in the end there should be a sort of recommendation, a model that helps stakeholders to decide what to do, how to develop this district. How do you see that? Is this something that also other brownfields in other cities with these brownfield issues, like old industrial sites or harbor sites or whatever it is this something that can be transferred rather easily to other brownfield sites, or is it something that is quite difficult to establish and depends on many local factors that would make this rather difficult? So transferability of sort of the work that you're doing.
I mean, in general, I mean, everything we develop in terms of modeling is transferable, because I mean, that's exactly the reason why I started basically from scratch again, because there are of course some simulation platforms around. We worked on a simulation platform in Stuttgart for many years, but most of them are not very flexible, not that modular, not really capable of dealing with very different data formats and coupling domains like buildings and mobility and so on. Yeah. So we basically started again pretty much from scratch to design a simulation platform that would, of course, be open source and very modular. So and the goal was always that we are not stuck to one specific proprietary solution, but we can work with any kind of data format, because the data formats are always very different. There are many organizations who try to harmonize and standardize data, but we are not there yet. So you need to be able to deal with different kinds of 3D information, and this 3D information is just the geometry. You need a ton more of data to be able to predict the energy consumption. I mean, you need to know the usage. There's very little information on mixed usage. So you need to look at tax records. You need to look at building permits and all kinds of information you can possibly find. to make your models realistic. So I think it's a lot of data handling, but then in the end you have a physical model and you can do predictions of course the status quo, and you can check whether you're on the right side by using measured data, and then you can do scenarios. I think that's the big thing. And then of course in brownfields, as I said, they are empty. So of course there are also tools available to auto generate different geometries, and we did this when we started first to work on Lachine some years ago. We used some of these geometry generators to just see, does it make a difference how exactly the geometry looks like? If you say, well, I want to construct so and so many square meters residential and so many square meters commercial, does it make a difference how it's done exactly on the energy consumption? And yes, it does, of course. I mean, it's not the impact is not that big. I mean, depends also on how good the building standard is, but you easily get 10-20% difference in heating and cooling by just arranging the geometry different, with more compact buildings, with more access to solar and so on. So that's something we can do. And yeah, of course, these tools can be applied to any kind of climatic zone or for new build and for existing, again, yes, we started to build a full 3D model of Montreal for the bigger area of Montreal, about 4 million people. But now we're working on Toronto, we're working on different case studies as well.
All right. And we're now basically switching a bit the topic from the Lachine project to 3D models of whole cities. How did you go about this? Like, was this a specific contract with Montreal and you then started, or was it like out of a research project that you said, like, we want to do this and we see the value in it?
Yeah, I basically wanted to do it. I mean, that's the beauty of this Canada Excellence Research Chair. Mm-hmm. You basically get funding for 7 years and you can do what you want, more or less, let's say.
That sounds so, okay.
And I thought, and basically there are two streams. I mean, the digital twins are one big aspect of the work, because that allows, I mean, I have about 50 PhD master students.
So I have 50?
Yes.
Oh,
so
wow.
it's a big team, and everybody is working, of course, on different aspects, and this urban modeling platform brings it all together. Because if somebody does a waste management strategy or greening in the city or building simulation or so on, that's exactly what the goal was from the beginning, to try to integrate as much as possible what all these different people are doing.
Yeah.
So that the simulation part was, and I'm in engineering, so I have a lot of building, mechanical, civil engineers and computer scientists. And so they are working on the digital tools. And at the same time, of course, we wanted to be as applied as possible, so to work on real projects. And that's a sort of, we call that the living lab stream. Mm-hmm. To see, well, we need to talk to stakeholders in the city who are either building innovative projects or designing them, and then we use the digital tools to support these implementations. So that was basically the strategy. And now, after 5 years, of course, it has reached a sort of level of maturity where you can really do something with the tools and work on real projects.
Yeah. And in the beginning, when you basically had to convince, for example, the city of Montreal to work with you on maybe a 3D visualization or the urban modeling, did you have to do a lot of convincing, or did you just sort of run into open arms with your proposal?
No, we basically did it. I think you always need to, I think you, if you want to convince somebody, you need to have something to show.
Yeah.
Just so we basically did it, and now we have a few interfaces to these models, and one is a web-based interface, so it's very easy for people to to access. Mm-hmm. So, and if they see, okay, now you have a full 3D model of the city, you can mm-hmm. select your building, one building, or now we have a service where you can select 1,000 buildings at a time. And then you get basically a retrofit calculation of yeah. saying, well, what if I retrofit the envelope or change the energy systems or both? Mm-hmm. What does it do to emissions and cost? And once people see that, they say, oh, this is interesting. And that maybe could help us to come up with a priority roadmap for all municipal buildings. So that's yeah. a project. So I mean, you need to be able to offer and show yeah. something. And then if this is interesting and new, then people get interested and then you can start doing a real project together. And that's yeah. something we do now with the City of Montreal to do a roadmap for municipal building, but also right. for other actors. Like there's the Desjardins is a big cooperative banking entity here in Quebec, and they want the same thing, basically a roadmap for retrofit of all their branches in Quebec. So mm-hmm. so if I think if they see you have something that could really help them do the job, then you can create real projects.
Yeah. What I find interesting is that you were able to sort of collect all the necessary data to just start with the 3D model and the first project sort of without the cooperation of the city, if I understand that correctly. Does that mean like all this, the data that you actually needed to get started, were they openly available? Because I know and I heard that Montreal and open data is quite a love story, but I was just wondering how hard was it for you to get all this data that you needed to start?
I mean, there is a lot of data available in most cities. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, building footprints, I mean, are available everywhere. And often you also find height information from LiDAR data. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of data available. The data quality is more the problem. Okay. So you need to spend a lot of time basically cleaning the data, because sometimes, I mean, there's also here in Canada sort of a national effort to work on these 3D models. Mm-hmm. But then you realize 80% of the volumes are correct, but there's for some reason one area in the city has this incredibly high buildings, and you realize mm-hmm. that can't be true. So I think that's more the challenge. I think you would find, mm-hmm. you do find the data in most cities. You really need to work on the quality, and then you need to combine many mm-hmm. data sets that haven't been combined. I mean, so, yeah. and of course, there's a lot of devil in the detail, because mm-hmm. there's not a unique ID for every building where you nicely find building permit information or yeah. property tax information or usage information. So to make sure that all the data that you find from different sources in the end matches to one specific location, that yeah. that is a bit of a struggle still. So it takes time. It's not necessarily that easy, but I mean, we started collaboration with New York and just had a workshop two weeks ago, and they have pretty good data sets, and so that took us only a day or so to build a 3D model and run the simulations. So it really depends on how good the data quality is and whether the city has put some effort in it.
Yeah. That's really incredible to hear also what data quality really, that it does make a change. What I'm curious now, when I heard like some data sets were just pretty shit, if I want to, I may say so, right? But were you able to get in touch with those data owners and sort of inform them about the fact that their data really sucks in this case? And how did this actually sort of, like, were you heard for these, or were they open for these talks and for talking about data quality? Or was it just like you thought, okay, no, we just do our stuff and then let's see what happens?
No, we are in touch with the National Research Council and the environmental, the sort of national organizations who work on this kind of data. I think they're aware of the problem, but there was never really a nationwide attempt to say, let's now come up with a good 3D model of the building stock. But we're getting there. So there's, but that will take some time and organization. And it's, of course, that kind of job will not be given to just one individual university. Yeah. So that requires more concerted efforts. Mm-hmm. But no, of course, we're talking to the organizations who started to build these data and mm-hmm. on many levels. I mean, the provincial level, Ministry of Environment, the city themselves with their climate action plan, they're all interested in building this digital model now. Mm-hmm. So we have several projects on different levels of government, and here's everything is very federated. Mm-hmm. I mean, very you really need to talk to the different levels of government. Yeah. and there's a strong attempt to come up with these digital models. So I would say in the next 5 years or so, we will see a lot of development.
I'm already excited to see that, actually. But also what I was, when I'm talking about excited, I saw a demo once of the future city playground, I think you call it. And I honestly just loved it because I hope I have it rightly in my head, it was basically a 3D version, I think it was of Montreal, and you had this little avatar that was walking through the streets, and you could actually rate alleys as sort of, oh yeah, I don't like this alley because it's dark and dangerous and I don't feel secure, but I really like this spot and I'll give it a star because this is my favorite spot in the city for whatever reason. How came this project about, Future City Playground? It's a totally different project from what we were talking just now, I think. Just the basis the same, the 3D model. But tell us a bit more about it.
Well, it's a gamification interface. Mm-hmm. It's not completely different. It's all basically interfaces to the same back-end calculations. In the end, you want to know, what are my emissions of the buildings, of mobility? Mm-hmm. But now we're looking at much broader sets of indicators, because if you think about livability or sustainability in a broader sense, it's of course not just about emissions. There are a lot of other sustainability indicators that you can calculate that depend on, as I said, access to green space, on safety, there's tons of indicators that are interesting to look at. And they can all be basically calculated. Some are more qualitative, but many can be calculated using the algorithms that we are developing. And then you need interfaces to make all that data and the results of the models visible. And one interface that we discussed so far is this web-based interface where you can sort of select some services and do some calculations. But then, of course, you can put the same 3D model into a gaming engine. And in the gaming engine, of course, for a start, it looks much more realistic. I mean, you can change perspectives. You can have a sort of godlike mode, or you have a sort of street-level mode. So it was a very practical problem. We have another sort of kind of brownfield area here, and there's a lot of discussions on density. So citizens typically in the neighboring neighborhoods, they don't want high-rise buildings. They want it more or less nice and low. The developers always want to have lots of density because it makes more money. And then the city, mostly is in between. And so that was the motivation of say, well, let's just put this the plans into a gaming engine, and then people can play with the height. Mm-hmm. So and then you get as a result the calculated sustainability indicators, so the energy consumption. But of course, the more density you have, the more likely you will have public transit. And that was a big discussion in that neighborhood. They might get a stop, an extra stop for a new light rail train, if there are enough people in that area. So so in the end, people in this kind of game, they can change the height of the buildings. And then they see the impact on all these sustainability indicators. And at the same time, they that you have more this sort of feedback possibility of saying, well, now I move to street level, I do certain tasks, bring somebody to school or so, and see how I like it, and leave comments. And that goes beyond the sort of typical indicator calculation, of course. Then you have direct feedback on what people think about a certain decision. And that is actually pretty interesting for this whole public consultation process, which is not sort of technological at all. And so now we have a first project with the Office of Public Consultation to see, can we use these gaming tools if there's a development to collect exactly the citizen feedback, and maybe let them modify a few things and see what gets most attraction.
So basically, when I understand it correctly, right, it's a two-way street, and as you know, the wonderful term of a win-win situation for so many parties. On the one hand, you can use then this model, this 3D tool, this digital twin, if you want to call it like that, to engage citizens, to increase participation, to show them impact of, you know, high rise versus low rise or public transport, whatever it might be. You can actually extend it to so many use cases. But on the other hand, you also, as a city, for example, get back valuable information that you otherwise potentially wouldn't get. That's pretty cool. That's really super interesting topic. And honestly, Ursula, I could talk with you for hours and hours and hours about this. And I would love to. Maybe I'll come to Montreal at some point and steal more of your time. But unfortunately, we're at the end of our time. But before we end this, I have a question for you. And I think I know the answer. But tell us, what do you think? Digital urban twins or 3D models of cities, is it a hype or is it here to stay?
It's here to stay. I mean, if data is available and the quality is getting better, people will make use of it. And I think the task is to make use of it for the public good and to really improve the sustainability of our cities. And that means we need to be able to easily access these tools with no fees in an open source way. And I think that's what we're working on. And of course, there's a whole stream of also companies who work on digital twins. And that is a bit of a different story because there are commercial interests, of course. But I think there's definitely a need to have accessible tools to design and dream of where cities could go from a citizen perspective.
I can't wait to see that, actually. Thank you so much, Ursula. I hope we'll see that in a not too long distance future in that case. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
So what we've learned today is that Montreal has so much more to offer than the world famous dish poutine, which I actually can highly recommend. So if you're going to Montreal, have a bit of poutine. But all jokes aside, my conversation with Ursula highlighted once more the role that universities and applied research can play in building a common ground between private and public interests. For example, when developing brownfields. And this is also where digital twins can come in. When in doubt, show it to citizens and let them explore the benefits of proposed changes to the built environment. And this is where an urban digital twin can come in. But also we've learned that we're not there yet. It's important that we continue on improving data quality. And also a lot of work is still to be done when it comes to making different data formats talk to each other. But at least digital urban twins are here to stay.